After weeks of protests, ethnic Serbs in Kosovo have agreed to take down their barricades. Hopes are high that the latest flare-up in tensions will now calm down. But how fragile is the peace between Serbs and Kosovars? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. Kosovo's uneasy peace has once again come under threat, this time from protests by ethnic Serbs that lasted weeks. In a display of how delicate the situation is there, a single incident, the detention of a former Kosovo Serb police officer, ended up drawing in the US, the EU and Serbia to defuse a dangerous standoff. The former officer's arrest led to spiralling violence with gunfire, arson attacks and ethnic Serbs blocking roads with barricades. They're now being taken down, but the political barriers remain.
From the morning hours, the removal of the barricades will begin. This is not a simple process and can't be done in 2 hours, as some have imagined. Within 24 to 48 hours, the barricades will be removed. But distrust is not removed. Those who are playing with the very existence of Serbs in Kosovo must know that. We will not allow it. Not now, nor in the future.
And Rasul Sardar has more from Pristina.
There have been a tremendous pressure from particularly from the European Union and the United States over the Kosovo and the Serbian government here to de-escalate the situation here, because the concern, the fear among the European countries and by the United States is that Russia will be keen to open up a second front after the war in Ukraine, to open up a second front of confrontation in the heart of Europe. And that is definitely something that the international community is quite concerned of seeing here. So that's why the pressure is ramping up over both governments to de-escalate the situation. But the situation still here remains fragile, and anytime it could escalate again. Rasul Serdar for Inside Story.
Kosovo declared independence from Serbia in 2008. That was 10 years after at least 13,000 people were killed in the Kosovo War, where ethnic Albanians fought ethnic Serbs and the former Yugoslav government. The US and most EU countries recognise Kosovo's independence, but Serbia refuses to. Kosovo's membership of the UN is blocked by Serbia's ally, Russia. About 4,000 NATO peacekeeping troops remain on the ground after the alliance bombed Serbia and intervened to end the conflict in 1999. The EU began sponsoring talks between the two sides in 2013, but they've made little progress. Resolving the conflict is one of the main conditions for both countries to join the bloc. Let's bring in our three guests from Budapest. Mimoza Kusari-Lila, she's the former Deputy Prime Minister of Kosovo and a current Member of Parliament. From Belgrade, Helena Ivanov, she is an Associate Research Fellow at the Henry Jackson Society and a Serbia analyst. And finally, from Graz, Florian Bieber, he is a Professor of Southeast European History and Politics and the Director of the Centre for Southeast European Studies at the University of Graz. A warm welcome to you all. I'd like to begin in Belgrade with Helena Ivanov. At the heart of all of this, and this is something that flares up from time to time, is Serbia's refusal to recognise Kosovo as an independent state. What are the barriers to that?
Well, I think, you know, very obviously, this is a situation whereby Serbia and its government feel that a part of its territory has unilaterally declared independence. And from Belgrade's point of view, recognition of Kosovo is just not an option. The second concern that the Serbian government has as well is the safety and security of the Serbs who live in the north. And lately, they have been communicating that they do not have the confidence that Kosovo authorities will indeed protect the Serbs who live in northern Kosovo. And I think, you know, from Kosovo's point of view, anything but a complete independence is also unacceptable. So we basically have two sides with completely mutually exclusive political aims.
Mimoza Kusari-Lila, why don't you look after the ethnic Serbs in the north of the country? Why don't you simply give them the rights that they need? That's what our guest in Belgrade is saying.
Actually, Mr. Khan, I think the main deficiency here is the lack of principles and proper arguments, because in Kosovo, there are 10 municipalities with majority of Serbian population. four out of 10 are located in the north of the country. And it's not a matter of not giving them the right they're requesting. It's a matter of Belgrade using them to instrumentalize their politics in the country of Kosovo. And Kosovo has declared independence in 2008, but Serbia sent the case in 2010 at the International Court of Justice that had declared there were no violation to international law. So the Declaration of Independence of Kosovo has been in full accordance with international law and also the right of everyone who lives in Kosovo, including Albanians, Serbs, Bosnian, Turks, and other minorities, is fully legitimate. So what we are facing now is the last mechanism of Aleksandar Vučić, the president of Serbia, to play and interfere in Kosovo affairs. Actually, the most important is to state that the recent attacks on Kosovo Serbs have not happened by Kosovo Albanians, nor Kosovo institution, but by Serbian gangs directly orchestrated by Vučić. We had a lot of properties being damaged. We had cars burned that were as a sign to Kosovo Serbs that you don't actually obey to Kosovo rules and Kosovo institutions because we were threatening you. So I think this is the last chain of attempts to actually hold Kosovo under their direction or intervene in Kosovo affairs. But as we've seen it, it's not sustainable, first of all. And second, Belgrade needs to let go of Kosovo Serb living in the north to live their life in independent Kosovo, as it's actually the situation with other Serbs who live on the south part of Ibar River.
Florian, I'm going to bring you in just a second, but I would like to get Helena's thoughts on those comments. Are the ethnic Serbs being used as a political tool by Belgrade?
Well, you know, as I always say in my research, I think politicians across the globe, and Serbia is not always an exception here, do play the nationalist card whenever they see it convenient for their political gains. However, the fact that that is sometimes potentially done is not the same as saying that certain concerns that Serbs in the north might have are not legitimate. And, you know, one of the things that's always been the most difficult part of negotiations between Belgrade and Pristina is the association of municipalities of the Serbs in the north, which is something that they are requiring to do. So I think the situation is a bit more complicated and complex rather than just one side using Serbs from the north for their political gains.
Let me bring in Florian Bieber here. Florian, is it much more complicated than one side using another?
Well, I mean, of course, it's complicated. I mean, I think it's very clear that the prime, you know, responsibility for the escalation we've seen in recent weeks has been the kind of very heavy-handed kind of response to Kosovo's attempt to introduce uniform license plates across the country by Belgrade and encouraging Kosovo Serbs in the north to respond in a very intense manner. That doesn't mean that there aren't legitimate grievances. I would agree with Helena that there are concerns. It's not that they don't have the minority rights. The rights are well established. It's just about kind of making a credible offer by the Kosovo institution sometimes to really incorporate the Serbs, to give them a sense that it's also their state. And this kind of sense of unease is something which Vučić is playing on, is amplifying, and of course he is controlling it. I mean, we have to keep in mind that the main political party of Serbs in Kosovo is basically controlled by Belgrade, and so Belgrade tells the Kosovo Serb political representatives what to do, including a few weeks ago to withdraw from the institutions of Kosovo. And all of that really has been heating up the tensions, and it goes back to a point which Helena was saying earlier about, you know, Kosovo insists on independence. I mean, that's normal after 13 years of independence, and Serbia doesn't accept it. But the question is really, why are we still in this place after 10 years of dialogue between Serbia and Kosovo mediated by the European Union? Why haven't we moved towards a more calmer relations, not recognition, but just an environment where those kind of tensions are unimaginable? I think there, the prime responsibility really lies with Serbia not trying to, in a certain way, calm the atmosphere and moving towards accepting the status quo. It doesn't mean recognition, but it just means accepting the fact that there's a government in Kosovo which acts like a state.
It's an interesting question. Let's ask it to Mimoza Kasari-Lila. Why have these talks failed? Why have we even not got to a place where you can have an environment for talks?
Actually, because the talks failed since, as I beginning started saying at the beginning of this interview, it was not a matter on principles. There was no respect on the agreement. It was always very hard to implement agreement reached in Brussels, first of all, and then the second. It was created a sense that within these 10 years of intensive talks, oftentimes, and then at a later times, less intensive talks, there was a different approach of Serbia on the ground versus what it was discussed or what it was trying to reach in Brussels. During these past 10 years, we had Serbia increasing the number of the military presence around the border with Kosovo. We had the situation actually even worsening rather than improving in between two countries, in particular when it comes to the security and the presence of Kosovo institutions in terms of what happened in the north. We had the agreement on the inclusion of Kosovo Serbs in the northern municipalities in Kosovo institutions, but then, as we've seen it recently, have been directly under the directives of Vucic. Also, in relation to what Mr. Bieber was saying earlier on the representation of Lista Srpska, one political party representing Kosovo Serbs in Kosovo Parliament and in other institutions, we've seen that their reaction has not been, and their representation on representing actually the need of Kosovo Serbs, be that in the north or in the south, but more represented in Vucic's policies in Kosovo. So as a member of parliament in three consecutive terms, I've seen that had never Lista Srpska or their MPs had raised any issue or right. daily lives of Kosovo Serbs, okay. mostly had been regarding or intervening about any request that came directly from Vucic.
Helena, can you just explain to us what Belgrade's point of view is? Why have these talks failed?
Well, from Belgrade's point of view, or at least how the government is arguing, basically they're saying that in the latest months, any attempt to negotiate have failed because they argue that Kosovo authorities don't seem to be willing to negotiate anymore. It is basically the statement that we can hear Vucic say almost any time he leaves Brussels. And one particular point of contestation has been the Association of Serb Municipalities in northern Kosovo. And I think, you know, if we're going to look at it from an objective point of view, I think one of the big reasons as to why negotiations are not working is because both sides are often resorting to blaming the other side and to not at all looking at the potential problems that they themselves are posing. That's exactly why I said at the beginning that this picture is way more complicated. Is Serbia always having its behavior at its best? No. Has Serbia sometimes frustrated negotiations? Most certainly. But has Kosovo done the same? Absolutely yes. This is that's what I'm saying. I think trying to see this thing from the other side's point of view and trying to understand the other side's grievances might actually be a better way forward when it comes to negotiations here.
Mimosa, I'll get your thoughts in just a second, but I do want to bring in Florian Bieber here. Florian, it's very difficult to negotiate anything when there's a massive troop buildup on your border, as we've seen happen quite regularly from Serbia. Is that part of the problem?
Well, I mean, these troop buildups are more bluster. I mean, you know, really, you know, Kosovo is protected by NATO-led peacekeeping troops. For Serbia to imagine crossing this boundary or border, you know, this would escalate things. Serbia doesn't want to risk a war with NATO. So I think this is not really to be taken seriously. I think much more serious is the fact that Serbia has been intervening indirectly into Kosovo through its, you know, kind of more illicit, less visible security structures. But, you know, I think what is really the case, and this is, I mean, some of the blame needs to go back to the European Union. And I would agree with Helena that both countries have not been implementing all of the commitments they've signed up to. The problem is all of the commitments they've signed up to over the last decade, including the first kind of breakthrough Brussels agreement 9 years ago, are very lacking in detail. So we don't know exactly what did they sign up to. And they're kind of more like statements of intent. And because they didn't want to kind of commit to a full contract. And so we don't really know often who is to blame for non-implementation. It's true that both sides have not lived up to the commitments they have made on paper, but those commitments are very thin. So when Helena was talking about the Serb Association of Municipalities, which is supposed to be established, there's great controversy whether that's kind of another layer of government, as Serbia argues, or whether, as Kosovo argues, it's just kind of a more informal network of those municipalities. And
right.
both sides are holding back because they're anticipating some talk about the final status, which would entail some kind of recognition by Serbia of Kosovo. And that's why it's hard to move forward.
Mimosa, you were listening intently there to what Florian was saying. Do you agree that both sides have actually not implemented the agreements that they were supposed to?
Absolutely not. For the first and the most important fact that the agreement was supposed to be and the discussion and negotiation for full normalization of relations between two countries evolving in a final recognition and mutual recognition. That's first. The second is that has been so much changing within this decade in the dialogue as well. And this is when I initially mentioned that there are no principle and values, because if it is the principle that two countries have to normalize relation and actually discuss about the full normalization, that it's not about discussing about internal affair of the other country. If, for example, on principle system, if we're talking about the minority rights in Kosovo or asking for the Association of Municipalities of Serbia in Kosovo, then we can ask the question back to Serbia, are you willing to establish the Association of Hungarians, municipalities in Serbia or other minorities in Serbia, first of all. Second, the initial agreement that was signed in 2013 and then renegotiated in 2015 with additional layers that was declared actually in violation of our constitution, had foreseen the association of all 10 municipalities of with majority of Serbian population to engage or be a part of the Association of Serbian Municipalities. Whereas from 2017 to 2020, we had a discussion for the changes of borders.
Helena, what we're hearing from Florian Bieber is there needs to be some movement in the talks for both sides to get round a table. If you can agree on some things, then the other things don't seem to be that big a deal anymore and agreements can be made. But having listened to what Mimosa is saying, you seem to be very, very far away from even the basics. There's no agreements in the near future, right?
I would completely agree with that. And I think that is exactly why, for instance, the car registration plates escalated as much as it did. I know that to someone who is not from the region or doesn't follow the context of the region, it might seem a bit even silly that something like car registration plates can escalate to a point at which it did. The problem is that for the two sides, this is either seen as giving up sovereignty from Serbia's point of view or substantially gaining sovereignty from Kosovo's point of view. And that's the reason why it is so hard to get the deal. Because any, even minor deals, any administrative deals, at their bottom, at their heart, are actually about sovereignty, whether Kosovo is gaining it or whether Serbia is losing it, which is why it is extremely, extremely difficult to come up with a deal that would work. And when you add to the fact that, you know, the two sides are more focused on blaming one another than actually trying to find a functional language, that's just yet another level of obstacles for reaching a functional deal between the two sides.
Florian, we are talking about two very young states here, both of them that fought a battle for national identity after the breakup of former Yugoslavia. All of that has to play into this, right? It's about national identity, sovereignty, as Helena says.
Indeed it is. But, you know, 10 years ago, it looked a lot more promising that these things would become less front and center of the process. I mean, the EU really put the incentive for both to move beyond on the table by saying, if you come to a settlement, membership is more likely. You're going to join the Union. And this is really where the whole thing has been stumbling. Attraction of joining the European Union is much less there than it was a decade ago, especially in Serbia. There's barely a majority in favor of joining the EU. And the government has been kind of deliberately downplaying the attractiveness of EU membership, and the EU did its own part. And that really undermines this whole, in a certain way, to transform this not into from a zero-sum game into something where actually both parties stand to win. And this is really where things are stuck in many ways. Without an offer for both, especially for Serbia, which can live with the status quo much better than Kosovo can, there's really no way of moving things out of it. And let's keep in mind, the current conflict is also triggered by the fact that Germany and France put a proposal on the table which would normalize relations without Serbia recognizing Kosovo. And it's really in response to this proposal that things have escalated to a large degree, because Serbia has no interest in this proposal, because this would actually kind of reduce tensions and would not allow it for the Serbian government to use it for domestic purposes. And this is, you know, the main kind of immediate trigger which brought this escalation about in recent months.
Now, Mimosa, what Florian Bieber seems to be saying is that one of the big incentives for peace is a European Union membership. But certainly in Serbia, that's not as popular as perhaps it once was. And even in Kosovo, that's maybe not as popular as it once was. So what is the incentive for peace for you guys?
It's very important, actually, to focus on the right of the communities in Kosovo, including Serbian community. I think with the Ahtisaari package that was presented right at the Declaration of Independence in Kosovo, the rights of minorities in Kosovo are definitely much more advanced than maybe in some of the EU countries. And if we are focusing on implementing those rights and cooperating and increasing the domestic dialogue between Kosovo institution and Serbian community living in the four north municipalities, I think this is the a major improvement, actually, but includes Kosovo internal affairs. Whereas in relation to Serbia, I think just the matter of applicable international law, the same as it was with the rule of International Court of Justice, that Kosovo's independence did not violate international law, I think this should be a good ground. I mean, we're talking about here Serbia, that is a country that has a status of candidate country for the European Union. And I think it has to be more advanced, definitely, in actually reflecting on the principles and values and the rights of communities in Serbia for other minorities,
we are running out of time, and it's a very interesting point you make, and I do want to bring it up with Helena. I mean, there is a law of diminishing returns here. The EU has had a role for 10 years. However, it seems to get weaker every stage of negotiation. Are we at the stage now where the EU role is just simply unhelpful?
Well, I wouldn't say that it is unhelpful. I think the international community's presence is something that is often crucial for de-escalating any tensions, as we've seen in the last few days and as we've seen in the summer. I also think that the international community's involvement in general is serving as a very good deterrence for both sides not to overly escalate. So I wouldn't say that it's not helpful. What I would say, however, is that its leverage and its ability to respond effectively or to really influence the relevant actors is decreasing over the years, partly because the confidence, at least on from Serbia's point of view, the confidence that Serbia will ever really join the bloc is incredibly low because the negotiations have been dragging on. And, that's what I think is actually the case with the EU.
Florian Bieber, if Moscow simply turned around and said, OK, you guys make peace, peace would happen, right?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, Serbia is pursuing its own interests, its own agenda. It's not really, it's looking for protection from Russia when it comes to UN membership of Kosovo. But Serbia is its own actor. It has its own interests. And it's going to do what, especially the current government, we have to also distinguish between society at large and the government. The government has a particular agenda, and that's keeping the status quo, because it's also domestically, we have to keep in mind, Serbia has becoming less democratic over the last decade. It's been the government of Vucic has been really, really downgrading media freedoms, independent institutions. And so in a certain way, the Kosovo conflict helps him to distract from this issue. And so from that point of view, he does what he sees in his best interest, no matter what other actors might say.
Mimosa, what do you think of that? What do you think of the idea that actually Russia doesn't have that much of a role to play in Serbia anymore? I know you've been critical of those things before.
Well, actually, I share somehow slightly different opinion. I think there is a major role of Russia to play in Serbia. However, considering the recent events, in particular of the unprovoked aggression of Russia toward Ukraine, and actually of Serbia not making a clear statement on dividing itself from that invasion, yes, on the international or in the foreign affairs for Serbia, it's not a very beneficial point. When it comes to Kosovo, I think there has been focus in general to actually try to overturn the events of 1999 when Serbia lost war, and then trying to gain in a dialogue something that it lost during the war. And that is very destructive objective in itself, because you are not thinking about the peace and you are not thinking, regardless of what they're saying, you're not thinking about the normalization, but you're thinking of how you actually can switch the reality that had happened in the ground and had been developed in recent years, including the Declaration of Independence, the democratic institutions of Kosovo. But you're actually trying to claim everything as victory, as it happens with recent events in four municipalities in north of Kosovo with barricades and with actually forcing Serbs to leave the Kosovo institution, those that have been in position in northern municipalities.
I want to thank all our guests, Mimoza Kusari-Lila, Helena Ivanov and Florian Bieber. And I want to thank you as well for watching. Now, you can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.